Today reported on Sunday, June 6, that the siblings, whose family has been living under the threat of imminent displacement from their house in Karam al-Jouni in occupied East Al-Quds Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, have become icons of the Palestinian struggle against Israeli settler expansion, he added. The latest crackdown in Sheikh Jarrah by Israeli regime police came just days before the Supreme Court is set to rule on whether Palestinians in the neighborhood can be expelled from their homes at the behest of Israeli settlers. A hearing on the matter was postponed last month, just before the Zionist regime kicked off its deadly 11-day bombing campaign in the occupied Gaza Strip. The historic Sheikh Jarrah district is inhabited by the descendants of Palestinian refugees who were expelled from their towns and villages by the Zionist militias during the Palestinian Nakba catastrophe of 1948, Middle East Eye noted, adding at least 13 families have been ordered to leave their homes in Sheikh Jarrah since May, including 58 people facing the threat of expulsion from their homes where they lived for generations. In October 2020, an Israeli court ruled in favor of Israeli settlers who claimed that some 8 Palestinian families in Sheikh Jarrah are living on land that used to belong to Jews. Yusuf Monayer, a Palestinian-American writer and political analyst, said on Sunday, June 6th, that through attacking and arresting journalists and now arresting two of its most outspoken advocates in Muna al-Kurd and Muhammad al-Kurd, the Israeli regime is trying to stop you from hearing about Sheikh Jarrah. Adding, the best response is to listen harder and amplify their voices louder.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In that permission, Shahid said, after praising Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says that our respectable son Hujjatul Islam wal Muslimin Sayyid Mahmud Hashimi has spent a long time of his life learning fiqh, usul and theological studies, so that he has succeeded to become a mujtahid on whom Islam and the Muslims may rely.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Shahrudi was living in Najaf. This was because, I mean, the ex-Ba'athist regime hadn't devastated the whole Najaf seminary. And another one is that Najaf was in some way the hub of all the Shiite world.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atal, the host of the program, and this is the teacher you're listening to, an analysis on the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim thinkers, jurists, and philosophers all across the nation of Islam. With me in the studio are two experts, Dr. Mohammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani, a faculty member of the University of Qom, and Sayyid Mohsen Naghwi, an Islamic scholar from the Islamic House of Qom. Sayyid, salam alaikum, welcome to your show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
And Dr. Mohammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani, thank you very much, and salam alaikum to you.
Salam alaikum, and thank you.
So for today's episode, we want to talk about an outstanding figure, the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Hashemi Shahroudi. He was an Iranian jurist, a politician, and Shia religious authority, who in most of the websites, when you look for him, he is mostly known as the head of the judiciary system or the judicial power in Islamic Republic of Iran. But for today and the upcoming sessions of our program, we want to most talk about his scholarly and academic, we can say, life and fields of studies, something which is overshadowed by his political life. Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, let's start with you, brother. Give us a background about the lineage and the forefathers of Sayyid Mahmoud Hashemi Shahroudi, where he was born, and talk a little bit about his biography for us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, the late Ayatollah Mahmoud Shahroudi was born in Najaf on 15th of August 1948. And he was from a scholarly family because his father, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Hashemi, was also a prominent scholar in Najaf. And he was one of those, we can say, scholars who attended the first round of the lectures of Ayatollah Khoi.
That's right.
In Najaf. And when we say first round of the lectures, it means like when a person becomes mujtahid or Ayatollah, he has some lectures named as Durusa Kharij.
Okay.
Which are open book, we can say, like,
yes,
lectures. And that are at the level of, we can say, like, above something which is like PhD or a post-PhD level, we
okay.
can say. He was one of them, and he was his father was the first person who wrote, basically, those lectures of Ayatollah Khoi.
You mean the scripts out
the
of
scripts,
the audios?
Yes.
That's right.
And he named those lectures as, like, the bookish form as the Muhadharat al-Fiqh al-Ja'fariya.
Mm-hmm.
He named that book, and Ayatollah Khoi also has written a preface for that, and he commented on that. And since he was from a great, like, scholar family, it is also said, like, when he was about to wear the turban,
that's
Ayatollah
right.
Mahmoud Shahroudi,
yes,
late Mahmoud Shahroudi, Ayatollah Khoi, basically, while he was placing the turban on his head, he was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked his father in him, and he wished for him to be the scholar as his father as well.
That's all right.
From the mother side also, he was from the Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Madad family, who was also a known family. So basically, they were from, we can say, scholarly family, and they had a scholarly background. And his brothers and whole family, obviously,
right.
they were all active
okay.
in this field.
Thank you very much. Dr. Fakhwani, something which was very controversial, especially about Ayatollah Hashemi Shahroudi, was that he was born in Iraq and in Najaf. We can't say he's an Iraqi, so but now later on he got some political posts in Iran, high powers, judicial power. Talk a little bit about the lineage of these ulama. Maybe some of our dear listeners do not know that most of these great ulama that have been born in Iraq originally gets back to Persia and Iran. That's why it was called Ayatollah Hashemi Shahroudi, isn't it?
Yes.
Talk a little bit and explain a little bit about this. Even among the most outstanding scholars of our Sunni brethren, this is too, okay?
Yes, yes.
They date back to Persia and Iran, and at that time, like the Shia scholars. Talk
yes.
a little bit about this, please.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin astain. And first of all, thank you very much for inviting
You're
me
welcome,
to this
brother.
Episode. In this regard, I should like to mention that, it has been an established practice among ulama and among scholars to move from their hometowns to centers or hubs of higher education. As, for example, we find that, for example, today many scholars may migrate, for example, from their home countries to European countries or to America for, knowledge, for expertise, or for, higher levels of, for example, knowledge,
that's right.
education. Okay, such was the case in the past regarding the whole Shia world.
Mm-hmm.
For around at least 300 years, if I'm not mistaken, Karbala and Najaf, first Karbala and then Najaf, became prominent as not only Shia pilgrimage cities, but also Shia cities of higher education in the fields of, religious studies.
Religious studies,
because
right.
of this, we find that many scholars from around the whole world, particularly from the Shia world, and mainly from the Persian-speaking world. I mean, at that time from Iran, Afghanistan, and some parts of Pakistan, or perhaps some parts of India, flocked to Najaf.
That's okay? Right.
But among themselves, they retained the mother tongue and their own local cultures, okay, cultural practices.
That's all right. So although they were born, like Ayatollah Hashemi Sharidi, in Najaf, but, you know, originally they get back to Iranian, you know, family tree and lineage. Is it so?
Yes, and okay. I should like to tell you something else.
Okay.
Once I was in Karbala and I met a grand Ayatollah in Karbala. And the minute I wanted to talk with him in Arabic, he started, conversation with me in Persian. Mm-hmm. He was talking with me in Persian so fluently that I imagined, no, he shouldn't be an Iraqi.
That's
but,
right.
His dynasty have been living in Karbala for around at least 300 years. Mm-hmm. But since they were originally from Iran,
okay.
At home they speak in Persian, but, the minute they get outside, yes. Okay, they speak in Arabic. Okay?
Just look at the great names, Sayyid Abul Hassan al-Isfahani, Akhund Khorasani, okay? Or, for example, Sayyid Muhammad Kazim Yazdi.
Hamedani,
and also the late Ayatollah Khoui, okay, the teacher of the father of Ayatollah Hashemi Sharidi. Just look at the family names, all getting back to the region in Iran. Ayatollah Hashemi Sharidi was among those scholars and those families.
Certainly.
who were born in Iraq in Najaf, but originally getting back into Iran. Thank you very much for a nice explanation. So Sayyid Mohsen talked a little bit about his main teachers. Beside the father, who were the teachers, I've heard that he was among the prominent students of Shahid Assad, isn't it?
He was. He was the student of Ayatollah Khoi. Mm-hmm. And
directly.
Yeah, directly.
Oh,
because he got the turban like from him.
Oh, okay.
And I said, like, while he was putting that turban,
yes.
he cried, mm-hmm. and he remembered his father. Other than Ayatollah Khoi, Abul Qasim Khoi, he was the student of Imam Khomeini as well, and as well the student of Shahid Assad.
That's right.
And he got familiar with Shahid Assad through one of his students. And he went to his lectures and then he found him so knowledgeable. And then he started to attend his lectures.
That's right.
And after that, obviously, when he became the student of Shahid Assad, he got very close to him. As in some cases, he basically represent Shahid Sadr in some of the conferences.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there was a conference on Islamic, banking or Islamic, the economics in Saudi Arabia.
That's right.
Where they invited Shahid Sadr, and Shahid Sadr couldn't go there. Instead, he sent Ayatollah Shahrudi, mm-hmm. Mahmoud Shahrudi,
right.
as his representative to the Saudi Arabia, where he had he delivered a speech which changed the environment of that conference.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole discussion was about what Ayatollah Shahrudi presented there.
That's right.
From his teacher, Ayatollah Shahid Sadr,
basically.
Shahid
Sadr was really a master.
And right after that, Shahid Sadr wrote a letter to one of his students in Beirut,
mm-hmm.
explaining about what Ayatollah Shahrudi has done in Saudi Arabia. And he praised him and he said, like, he changed the whole environment in our favor. And
that's
then,
right.
Obviously, when you're in the Hawza and when you're studying with so prominent teachers, it makes you prominent as well if you are, I don't want to say use the word clever, intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
The word intelligent.
A prodigy or genius.
Prodigy or genius.
That's right.
Because these are the same wordings which Shahid Sadr also used for him.
For him, that's
in the
right.
letter which he wrote to one of his students.
That's right. As I'm talking to you now, I'm looking at the websites. You know, I see a very beautiful picture that is Muhammad Baqir Assad sitting on a chair. And the young Hashemi Shahrudi, Sayyid Mahmoud, is standing, you know. And how
Next
much respect,
him.
Yeah, is standing beside him, you know, the student and the teacher. And we know that all the students of Muhammad Baqir Assad, especially Ayatollah Hashemi Shahrudi, were great in terms of, we can say, the new understanding and new interpretation out of the religious ruling and how much Islamic rulings like the Fakh Rouhani can be applicable in today's life of the people in 20th and 21st century. This was the job that was started by some people like intellectuals like Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Asad and the circles of his students like Ayatollah Hashemi Shahrudi. So how much do you think, Brother Dr. Fakhruhani, that Ayatollah Muhammad Baqir Asad had influence on the thoughts and works of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Hashemi Shahrudi?
Yes. Regarding this question, I should like to say that the influences of the late Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Asad was not only on the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Shahrudi, rather personally, as I met some other prominent students of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Asad, I found that almost all of his students and close associates, I met some of them in Najaf.
Okay.
I found out that almost all of them have been greatly influenced by the sharp-sightedness of Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Asad, and that Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Asad was an exceptional figure in terms of applying Islamic principles and particularly Shi points of view to real-world problems. Mm-hmm. And this is very important. Okay?
That's right.
In some religious traditions, we find that some students or, for example, some scholars are always constantly kept in the past. However, in the Shi world, and particularly at the golden period of the Najaf Seminary, we find that outstanding clerics and outstanding mujtahids trying to apply whatever they've learned in the Najaf Seminary in terms of and in the case of the real problem of the Muslim world. Okay, this is why, for example, we find that in terms of, for example, social problems, in terms of economic problems and some other, kinds of problems, the views and attitudes of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Baqir Asad have influenced students very greatly.
That's all right.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
If you allow me, there are a couple of statements about Ayatollah Shahrudi from Shahid Sadr.
Very good.
In one of his letters to his students, he writes like, Mr. Hashemi has a wonderful and genius growth in science.
Mm-hmm.
And then he continues, after a couple of lines, he says that the Hashemi is the summary of my existence.
Oh,
this is very strange, saying that. And then he says, Sayyid Mahmud Hashemi is the best representative to direct our scientific school. You know, this statement was, this letter which he wrote to his student in Beirut was after when he attended the conference in
Yes.
So these are the statements of Shahid Sadr in regards to
That's him, all right.
basically.
Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Dr. Fakhruhani, for your presence in this episode of the program, The Teacher, regarding the life and the biography of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Hashemi Shahrudi. We'll get into more details about his academic and political life, and also the role that he had in judiciary, we can say, power and system in Islamic Republic of Iran. He was also, and he has been, one of the members of the Fiqh Council of Ayatollah Khamenei, which has many contributions and consultations were given to him, to the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, when he was the chairman of different congresses over here and there in Islamic Republic of Iran. It was very kind of you, Dr. Fakhruhani.
Welcome.
And Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi.
You're welcome.
And dear audience, dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher, which was about the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmud Hashemi Shahrudi. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Call of Islam Radio, and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Food for thought. Hello, dear friends, and how about listening to some bezels of wisdom from the Prophet's sixth infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him. No one should be regarded as trustful before he keeps three things: funds, secrets, and honors. He who keeps two and betrays a third is not trustful.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers. Iranian capital Tehran has hosted a festival of cake sculptors. The event showcases delicious sweets that are carved into eye-catching sculptures. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's not a piece of cake to bake a sculpture, but pastry chefs here have made it. In the fourth festival of cake sculptures in Iran, sugarcraft artists from across the country have come under one roof in Tehran to cast their spell on these sweets and carve a wide range of fascinating 3D figures out of them. From this tasty coronavirus to this beautiful angel that is picking up the only eatable trash in the world.
Here you can see this angel, which represents the innocent heart of labor children, collecting pieces of trash that contain some of the simplest dreams of a labor child, such as quality food, books, and toys.
My cake is made based on what we call installation art. I have put together iconic structures and monuments of Iran, but when you take a look at them from a special angle, you can see Iran's map.
Some of the cake sculptures here have really pushed the envelope of the art of sculpting, like this bust that shows the 13th century Persian poet Rumi, surrounded with a heavenly garden that's decorated with intricate and mind-boggling details. It took its creator almost a month to finish it.
In the middle, I have put the bust of Rumi, who we refer to as Maulana in Iran. He's holding his most significant verse work, Masnavi Manavi. The garden I created around him and the birds here all are inspired by his poems.
Organizers say they hold the festival every year to modernize the confectionery industry and combine it with fine arts to make it more appealing to the public.
500 works are showcased here in four sections. Bust cakes, wedding cakes, cookie cakes, which are made using royal icing, and the fourth section is cream cakes. The major goal is to scout for talents who can revolutionize the confectionery industry.
Some of the participants in the festival are pastry chefs who try to make their cakes look better, and others are actually pro sculptors who want to bake a figure instead of carving it. Perhaps it's easy to tell who is who by taking a glimpse at their cakes. But sweets will win the competition. They're both delicious and delicate.
It takes ultimate care and a knack for both bakery and artistry to be able to transform sweets into statues. In fact, they're both so spectacular and yummy that make you want to have the cake and eat it too. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Nowadays, phone addiction is causing an increasing number of accidents worldwide. A Korean engineer has come up with a creative, although satirical, way to tackle that issue. Pang Min-wook is a 28-year-old industrial engineer or designer. He has invented a robotic eyeball people can wear to avoid accidents when using their phones while walking. The device is strapped to the forehead and opens its eyelids when the users lower their heads. The third eye then beeps in warning when the user comes within 1 or 2 meters of an obstacle. Pang says his device is not a solution to the issue and hopes that people will understand the severity of their reliance on gadgets when they see their third eye.
As the coronavirus continues to wreak havoc in India, some auto rickshaw drivers have turned their three-wheelers into makeshift ambulances to provide patients with first aid services.
Those are patients.
In New Delhi, the municipal ambulances are often occupied. There are also some very narrow alleys or built-up areas that are inaccessible by regular-sized ambulances. In these cases, our makeshift ambulances came in handy then. We attend to people in need with oxygen cylinders.
Mishra, who started the Rickshaw Ambulance Initiative, says his center attends around 1,200 calls per day. He says rickshaw volunteers transport roughly 150 patients during peak hours. The brave drivers work 12-hour shifts and mainly serve people with mild symptoms. They wear full protective gear, including face shields, while on duty. The three-wheeler ambulances are easily identifiable by the large printed image of the fleet and emergency call numbers. Mishra says the fleet will continue running with all its might until the coronavirus is under full control in India. In Russia, drone enthusiasts have gathered in the capital, Moscow, to show off their technological creativity in a racing competition. The participants created their own drones and made changes to the models right on the site where the competition was held to improve their chances to win the contest. The goal was for the participants to complete the track in the shortest possible time. Participants say the interesting thing about the competition is that it's cheaper than other games.
It's a lot of fun. From the outside, it may not be so clear, but when you're inside it, it becomes really fun to talk, race with the competitors, learn from their experience some new technological things. As for the high cost, it is expensive, but when compared with the snowboards and skis, it is really cheaper, but more expensive than knitting.
In 2017, the International Federation of Aeronautics, or FAI, announced drone racing as an official sport. In 2018, Russia's sports ministry included drone racing in all Russian register of sports with a class code F3U following the FAI classification.
A science professor has released spectacular drone footage of lava streaming from an Icelandic volcano. Sørensen Johnson flew a drone over the volcano 2 months after it started erupting. He captured close-up shots of lava bubbling in its crater in the southwest of Iceland's capital. The volcanologists say that they have no idea how long this eruption will continue, adding that magma could flow for years. Iceland is home to dozens of active volcanoes. Volcanic landscapes have turned into a tourist attraction in the Scandinavian country.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
Two Russian cosmonauts have conducted spacewalk outside the International Space Station to prepare an old docking module for disposal. The duo spent more than 7 hours outside the ISS to wrap up preparations for the eventual disposal of the Pris docking compartment. According to NASA officials, the Russian cargo freighter will remove the two-decade-old module from the orbiting laboratory later this summer. Both the cargo ship and a press will burn up in the atmosphere above the Pacific Ocean. The orbiting press will clear the way for the arrival of a new Russian multipurpose laboratory module named Nuka, meaning science in Russian. Nuka is scheduled to launch on July the 15th this year. Wednesday's operation was the sixth spacewalk in 2021 in support of the space station assembly, maintenance, and upgrades.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf, named Han Yisa, was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Han Yisa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild. A Brazilian artist has found a way to reuse plastic bags in a very creative way, making something beautiful out of them. Eduardo Sroa turns recycled shreds of plastic into real pieces of artwork. He picks up the material from city streets and rivers. Without using a drop of paint, Sroa recreates paintings by Picasso, Van Gogh, and other famous artists. He says his goal is to draw attention to plastic pollution.
I present this series as a product that does not have paint, except for what has already been processed into plastic by the industry. It does not have glue. It is a box that was built, and inside I press and condense it. I make an accumulated cluster of plastic bags that ends up creating this image that you see.
Sura's exhibition is due to open in Sao Paulo in the coming months. His previous works were also aimed at raising awareness about the environment. He has created several giant installations in public places, mostly along polluted rivers.
Chinese archaeologists have unearthed a rare 3,000-year-old bronze figure from a site they have been excavating for months in Sichuan province. The 1.5-meter figure, deemed one of China's most famous archaeological discoveries. It consists of two parts. The upper part is 55 centimeters high, with a zoon, a vessel used in ancient times, on top of the head. The lower part is 60 centimeters in size, with kneeling posture. Similar findings in the past were just 20 centimeters in their heights. The bronze figure was discovered under massive ivory objects. So far, over 500 objects, including ivory, bronze, gold, and jade ware, have been found from six sacrificial pits of the Sanjingdu ruins. A Chinese man becomes the first blind Asian mountaineer to successfully scale the world's tallest peak, the Mount Everest. Zhang Hong completed the 8,849-meter high Himalayan feat with three high-altitude guides. The 46-year-old climber said he spent much of his trek holding onto his guide's arm. The pair said the most tiresome and risky areas were the so-called death zones, ice walls, and ice falls at around 8,000 meters. The Chinese climber recalled humbly embracing being part of Mother Nature after he completed his arduous journey.
No matter if you're disabled or normal, whether you have lost your eyesight or you have no legs or hands, it doesn't matter. As long as you have a strong mind, you can always complete anything that other people think you can't.
Zhang added that this is only the beginning. He said his next milestone is climbing the highest peaks from the world's continents known as the Seven Summits. The Chinese mountaineer lost his eyesight at the age of 21. After his success, he became the third visually impaired person to ever step foot on the Everest peak. A Russian company has developed a fully self-driving car that looks like it was taken right out of a sci-fi movie. Flip is the size of a conventional passenger car and has enough space for six people. Its creator says the advanced vehicle is a taxi of the future. Flip has fulfilled the requirements of international automated driving standards. It's powered by electricity, but it can also use other fuels like gas and hydrogen. The owners of this futuristic vehicle do not have to worry about running out of power. That's because its replaceable batteries can be changed in less than 5 minutes once they are out of electricity. A rare baby giraffe is born in a zoo in western France as conservationists try to increase the population of this endangered species. The cute Rothschild giraffe is the second born in the French zoo this year. Caretakers say the cubs will stay with the facility for 1 year before they would be sent to another site to start their own families. The Rothschild giraffes are critically endangered, and conservationists say that only 1,600 of them exist now. The general giraffe populations in the wild have also decreased by around 30% in the last three decades.
For many professional climbers, ascending Mount Everest for even once remains an almost distant dream. However, a Nepali man has achieved that feat not once or twice, but 25 times. Kami Rita Sherpa has arrived back in the capital, Kathmandu, after breaking his own whopping record of 24 ascents to the summit of the world's tallest mountain. The veteran climber hopes that his accomplishment represents a big achievement for his small country. Climbing tall mountains runs in Kami's blood. He belongs to the Sherpa tribe, one of the Tibetan ethnic groups and native to the most mountainous region of Nepal.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islami deena.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, dear brothers and sisters, Salamun alaikum. Peace and salutations of Allah be upon all of you, dear friend. You are with IRIB English Radio and today's special. Our topic is the wisdom behind calamities. Today, Wednesday, is the 28th of Shawwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 19th of Khordad, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 9th of June, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is the Holy Quran, chapter 3, verse 178.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. ولا يحسبن الذين كفروا أنما نملي لهم خير لأنفسهم إنما نملي لهم ليزدادوا إثما ولهم عذاب
And let not those who disbelieve ever think that because we extend their time of enjoyment, it is better for them. We only extend it for them so that they may increase in sin, and for them is a humiliating punishment.
The Quran has repeatedly applied the phrase, they do not think about infidels, hypocrites, and the person whose faith is weak. This is because these persons are deprived from the insight, proper analysis, good intellect, and necessary clear mind. Sometimes the disbelievers consider having possibilities, victories, and welfare as a sign of their own eligibility, while Allah respites them upon their stubbornness towards His essence and upon their being polluted by infidelity and corruption in order that they dive deep in their destruction.
IRIB English Radio. Recitation as well as translation of Quran.
وَلَقَدْ آتَيْنَا مُوسَى الْكِتَابَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَهْتَدُونَ
And we certainly gave Moses the scripture that perhaps they would be guided.
Short commentary of the Quran. Islamic issues.
Institution of the family in Islam is the most beloved by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The life of the infallible.
فجرا جئت بعد العسر يسرا ربنا أعلاك قدرا يا إمام
All in all, in today's special, IRIB English Radio.
As the previous episodes of today's special, we follow the topic calamities and disasters in life. Remember the words of the messenger, how wonderful is the affair of the believer, for his affairs are all good. And this applies to no one but the believer. If something good happens to him, he is thankful for it and that is good for him. If something bad happens to him, he bears it with patience and that is good for him. It is narrated that Umm Salama said, I hear the messenger of Allah says, There is no Muslim who is stricken with a calamity and says that Allah has enjoined. Verily to Allah we belong and unto Him is our return. O Allah, reward me for my affliction and compensate me with something better. But Allah will compensate him with something better. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to deal with how to come up with calamities and sorrows. In this connection, one of the good ways in order to calm a bereaved person is to put him or her in such a position that he or she would shed tears, freely, without any restriction or without restricting him or herself. For some time, we find that the bereaved person may not be that much willing to have interactions with others, with other people, but the reality of life is something else. The reality is that any person or any ordinary person needs interaction with other people. So after a short period of time, the survivor should return to the normal course of life. Have its regular interactions or regular activities and so on. Another one is that it shouldn't be said that someone who doesn't shed tears may not feel that much sorrowful for the dead person. In favor of the dead person. Rather, we find that even the even those people who are physically very strong or psychologically very established, at receiving such a very distressful piece of news, they have to shed tears in this regard. And some other people, those people who are around them, should try to solace them, to calm them. And it happens almost to everybody.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
Success in the light of calamities. The master of the pious Imam Ali alayhi salam, who was exemplarily strong physically, extraordinarily high spiritually, and unparalleled in steadfast when in difficulties, in his letter to his governor in Basra, after describing a little about his own simple food, in a part of that communication writes, I understand some of you will say that when Ali ibn Abi Talib takes so little food, he must have become extremely weak physically and too feeble to stand before the enemy. But remember that the wood of forest tree is hard, whereas the skin of fresh and green tree is thin and delicate, and that the forest tinder flares up sooner and keeps on burning longer. The trees growing on river banks live at ease and are not habituated to storms, but the jungle trees are nourished in tough weather. They grow up in hardship and are fed by scorching sun, hot winds, and scant water.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa. La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
The the wisdom behind calamities. Calamities strengthen people's resolve. Allah chose for His Prophet a hard life filled with all kinds of hardship from a young age in order to prepare him for the great mission that awaited him, which none could bear but the strongest of men who have gone through hardship and who are tested with calamities and bear them with patience. Allah reminded the Prophet of that when he said, "Did he not find you, O Muhammad, an orphan and give you a refuge?" Chapter Ad-Duha, chapter 93, verse 6. It is as if Allah wanted to prepare the Prophet to bear responsibility and endure hardship from an early age.
First of all, and the first step to maintaining a solid and powerful faith is for you to know the rules. Many people simply do not know the rules. You have to learn the rules. You need to know traffic laws. You need to know how to handle a vehicle. You can't just jump, sit in a car and say, "You know what, let me go out today. I'll discover the traffic laws eventually. I'll see what people do on a stop sign, how they pass an intersection, when do they turn the signals." I mean, you could technically do that. But imagine how many accidents and how many people you'll kill before you do that. The first step is to know the laws of the religion of Islam before you get into difficult situations. Many people don't know the fiqh and the rulings of the religion of Islam. That's why one hadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam tells us, "At-tajiru fajir hatta yatafaqqah." It's a beautiful hadith. It says every businessman, every single person who conducts transactions, who works, is a fajir. Who's a fajir? Fajir is someone who is sinful, who commits sins, who transgresses. Until what? Every merchant, every businessman is sinful, is going the wrong way, until he knows his Islamic rulings. Shukran. Until you know the Islamic laws. Because Islam is transactions. One hadith tells us, to summarize Islam, the Imam summarizes the religion for us. The Imam tells us religion is a set of transactions in your life. How you deal with other people, how you deal with yourself, with your family, with your friends, with your society. It all boils down to transactions. If you don't know the laws and the rules, sooner than later you'll realize that now you're in trouble. How are you going to get yourself up?
Dear brothers and sisters, that was all for today's special. This episode of today's special. May Allah bless you all. Have a nice time. Fi amanillah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.